Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. The show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, also available on Spotify. The music you heard right after the intro, yep. That's Van Halen and Humans Being from the soundtrack to the film Twister. And I know Van Halen music has been used in a lot of films, but there's only been a handful of original music made specifically for a film. And no, I'm not going to play anything from The Wildlife, although I'm sure with the death of Eddie Van Halen, The Wildlife soundtrack is probably going to get a reboot or a re-release. At least it should. But yeah, as a teenage knucklehead, Van Halen meant a lot to me as a kid and in my 20s. So salute to Eddie. Thanks, man. And anyway, we'll end the show with another little piece from Twister because I can. Anyway, hope you guys are doing okay. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're being good to one another. Hope you watched some good movies over the last week. And we'll get to your list, the grab a pencil portion, in a little bit. But some shameless plugging. Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m. are your three last chances to see the radio production of Neil Simon's Plaza Suite at the Cat Theater up in Carmel. You can go to thecattheater.com for tickets. And full disclosure, it is directed by yours truly. So that is happening. Also up and running now, the 29th annual Heartland Film Festival, which is having digital events, streaming events, as well as events at Connor Prairie and at the Tibbs Drive-In. So this is running through October 18th. You can go to heartlandfilm.org/festival for all the information. And I know my brothers and sisters over at the Midwest Film Journal and the Film Yap have been doing coverage on the Heartland Film Festival. So go check that out. It's cool. And I'm happy the fact that the festival is still going on, even under all of these circumstances. So going to get to the what else is playing around town before I get to my list as well as your list. At the Tibbs Drive-In, as mentioned, there are two screens devoted to the Heartland Film Festival. Also on screen one, you have Child's Play, which I believe is the remake. I'm just double checking based on the artwork. That says 7:45. At 9:35, Army of Darkness. And then at 11:05, the first Hellraiser. And then on screen three, you have The War with Grandpa and Tyler Perry's Boo, Madea Halloween. All of that and two screens devoted to the Heartland Film Festival at the Tibbs Drive-In. Over at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville on Friday night, so you still have time, at 7:30 p.m., Friday the 13th, Part 2. Followed by at 9:15 from 1976, The Town That Dreaded Sundown. Oh, man, that's the one with Ben Johnson, Andrew Prine, Don Wells. A hooded serial killer terrorizes the residents of a small Arkansas town in 1946. And then at 11 o'clock on Friday, The Prowler from 1981 with Christopher Guttman, Vicki Dawson, and Lawrence Tierney. Now, October 10th at the Skyline at 7:30, you have the first Scream. at 9:45, Sleepaway Camp from 1983, and then at 11:30 p.m. from 1971, A Bay of Blood. All of that is happening at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville. Over at the Can-Can, mark your calendars. October 14th, they'll do the outdoor screening of Eraserhead, David Lynch's Eraserhead. Wednesday the 21st, an outdoor screening of Get Out. And October 28th, an outdoor screening of Shaun of the Dead. Over at IU Cinema, we have through October 14th, Papicha, virtual event, of course. Running through October 14th as well, Made in Bangladesh. Also running through October 14th, RBG. Running through October 21st, Dead. Running through October 21st, Maroni for President. Running through October 14th, I Used to Go Here. And the special virtual event tonight at 7 o'clock, Marcel Dunchap, The Art of the Possible. And then Tuesday, October 13th, a special virtual event with Chris Ray. And then Thursday, October 15th through October 28th, the documentary Jimmy Carter, Rock and Roll President. And then Friday, October 16th at 7 p.m., a special virtual event. These are all virtual, by the way. But at 7 o'clock on Friday, October 16th, the 2004 documentary Chisholm 72, Unbought and Unbossed. And then Tuesday, October 20th at 7 p.m., a conversation on election. All of that is happening over at IU Cinema. Okay. It's funny. I try to start my list with whatever errors or omissions or mistakes I did on last week's show, and I had a doozy. I said that last week I watched three Ingmar Bergman films, and that is true, but I only told you really about two of them, the black and white dramas from the 50s. I'm about four discs away from completing the Ingmar Bergman box set. I'm very excited, but it's going to be a huge hurdle next with Fanny and Alexander. But I did revisit 1978's Autumn Sonata. This is the one and only time that Ingrid Bergman and Ingmar Bergman, no relation, got to work together. And it's a reunion between an adult daughter, played by Liv Ullmann, and her mother, played by Ingrid Bergman, who is a famous concert pianist. And things start to go well initially, and then raw emotion starts to come out. There's a loveless marriage, at least on one end. We see mother choices and daughter choices and how the tension starts to build. I refer to these scenes with Ullmann and Bergman as a quiet boxing match, which leads to an inevitable showdown. But really strong performances across the board, especially from the ladies. Ingrid Bergman got a nomination for this. This was, I believe, her last feature film. And Ingmar Bergman got a screenplay nomination, also well-deserved. But yeah, Autumn Sonata, check it out, especially this time of year. Because of the title. All right. New on Amazon Films is something I just experienced before recording this film, this podcast. And I know at the end of the year, I'm going to try to cobble together some best and worst of the year, which I'm morally obligated to do at the end of the calendar year. And obviously this year the list could be a little thin or just have an asterisk by it because of the circumstances that we're living in. That being said, this film on my best 10 list, no asterisk. It's completely justifiable, and it's not because it's a small year or a limited year of film releases. It's really that strong. And it's a documentary called Time, and it's shot in black and white and is spliced together of home footage, cell phone, video camera, depending on how it's done, as well as camera work from Garrett Bradley. But it's a story of a woman with six boys, and the father is incarcerated. Mother and father both rob a bank. She takes a plea deal and gets 12 years. He does not, and it looks like he's never getting out. And early on in the film, I have to be honest with you, I didn't know it was a documentary right away, but I was ready for it to go either way. I was ready for it to accept it as a documentary or be a really well-acted cinema verite documentary-style shooting of a film. It's a documentary, by the way. But you see her raising her boys to be to be successful young men, and all the while still dealing with lawyers, still dealing with the parole board, still trying to get her husband out of jail. And one of the sons talks about, I believe it's the one who graduates from dental school, that his family is an image of strength hiding behind a lot of hurt. And you see that in this woman. It's going along as time goes on. We see, obviously, young footage of when they were kids. She was pregnant with twins, I believe, at the time she was released, if I remember, if I'm doing a timeline correctly. Sybil's mother, that's the mother, talks. Obviously, there's a lot talking about as far as the incarceration system, incarceration equals slavery, how the prisons will cut budgets in education and training, but they will not cut the budgets on inmates. And the frustration and her, and when she gets out of jail, when the mother gets out of jail, we find out they met her, she and Robert met when they were 16, and the fact that she's still with him, still sticking by him, she, once she gets out, she becomes a car sales lady. She becomes a huge motivational speaker around the Louisiana area and in the South. The frustration of putting money for high-end lawyers with no results. There's a really powerful moment where she is constantly on the phone with the courthouse checking on paperwork and as being as polite and as proper as can be. And when she catches a particular employee in a falsehood, you see her frustration let out on camera. And it's really powerful stuff, especially seeing this tower of strength, raising her boys, trying to and also spread the good word about what not to do because of her situation to students and trying to get her husband out. It's a fascinating look. And honestly, without giving anything away, I was emotionally ready for the film to go either way. And the last 10 minutes pack the biggest emotional punch I've had this year at the movies or at home watching the movies. So it's under 80 minutes. It works. It hits the emotional buttons that that I need in a documentary like this. So look for the film Home, courtesy of Amazon Films. It's excellent and one of the best things I've seen this year. Also pretty good and out from IFC is the inspired by true events, inspired by true stories, the World War II drama A Call to Spy. And the story of British government bringing in ladies to be spies, and it's not a Bond girl aspect. The film stars Stanley Kadick, for you fans of Castle. Linus Roach is one of the token older gentlemen that shows up in this. And the film, it follows Vera Atkins, that's the stunt of Kadick, as far as the recruiting aspect. As and then getting Virginia Hall in this, played by Sarah Megan Thomas, who also did the screenplay, and so you follow her, you follow Rahida Apke, an Indian, American mother, Indian Muslim father, and a British citizen, and a pacifist who's great at radio, great at wire work, and her training schedule, and becoming roommates with the Sarah Megan Thomas character, a woman who's been trying to be an American diplomat, dealing with sexism in the 40s, has lost part of her leg, but doesn't let that stop her. And they become members of the Baker Street Irregulars and sent to Lyon, France in 1941, not only to squash propaganda going on by the Nazis in occupied France. And in this case, you see a really tense moment of them finding a land strip in the countryside and not getting caught, transporting an injured spy. It's watching a film set in 1941 and you hear the terms like, oh, false information, never seen such hatred. You do eventually get some gender bias toward fellow agents with the two ladies. And it is really kind of behind the scenes And don't expect a Bond film in this. Really, the action, quote-unquote, action sequences don't really kick in until about an hour 18 into the film. Yes, I marked these down in my notes. And a really good plot twist at an hour 25 involving a contact that the lady spies have. So the film is a really good showcase for their perseverance and good performances across the board and a good tense thriller. So check out A Call to Spy, courtesy of IFC. Also out on Amazon Studios, and this is a part of the Blumhouse collection. There's four films that are coming out, all under one roof, as they say. Two opening this week, two opening next week. And I got to check out of a thriller called Black Box. And it's dealing with a father with short-term memory loss due to a car accident, which he loses his wife. And his young daughter has really been helping out, taking care of things. And he meets a known doctor, a scientist, played by Felisa Rashad, who is able to help him out through hypnosis. But we get flashbacks, kind of reminiscent to Get Out. It is another example of and I guess it's not fair to compare it to Get Out because it is a thriller with a predominantly African-American cast. But it does have that moment of flashbacks that reminds me of Get Out and hypnosis. But that's all the comparison there is to it. As time goes on, we find out that there is another man in this man's psyche. And about an hour into the film, there is a plot twist that I'm able to accept. And I think that's the thing with thrillers, is especially in something like this, and I don't want to give it away. When we get to that turn, you either accept the turn or you don't. And then do you enjoy the rest of the film? And in this one, I did. I will say this. This is a film that I still enjoyed it. And I know that a plot point is going to happen because of a casting of a particular person. Because this known actress has had a career with a particular image, and this is a chance for this actor to change that image a little bit and play against type. And it works. It's underplayed. It's well done. And it doesn't turn into a big, dumb horror film in the last 10 minutes. And despite the fact that there are three endings, they all work out fine. So kudos to Amazon Studios and Blumhouse for the film Black Box. And we'll talk about Evil Eye next week. Also out, courtesy on video, of Indie Picks Films is the film called The Blue Eyes. And this is a story of American tourists in Mexico who wind up having an encounter with a shape-shifting witch. Don't you hate when that happens? She's selling some trinkets in the market, including a jaguar fang bracelet, jaguar fang in a bracelet, which immediately reminded me of the idol in the Brady Bunch Hawaii episode. And things start to go bad for the American couple. A dog at dinner that seems to follow them around more than they really need. He starts hallucinating of naked ladies in the forest. He falls ill. The acting is a little bit stilted. She has a nightmare of a dog attack and wakes up with dog bites. And it's also this plot point of dealing with the American male tourist and his grandfather's past in history in this section of the country. I was fine story-wise. Again, the acting is a little, but it's a decent enough thriller. So The Blue Eyes, courtesy of Indie Picks Films. Also on video, courtesy of Cornet Films, is the documentary called Botero, based on the it is now the most established or the most revered living artist. That's Fernando Botero. And I have to admit, I'm a sucker for documentaries about artists as far as their history, the process, their impact, and the impact still going on today. And truth be told, I didn't know a whole lot. I think I'd seen the name in a couple books, but you get a deep dive into Botero's work. Growing up poor and fatherless in Colombia in the 1930s, and it was a big deal back in the 40s and 50s if you mock the church in art, especially in South America. He moves to New York in the 1950s. His first exhibit was panned by critics, but he stuck to his guns and eventually got his work picked up by the curator of the Museum of Modern Art and worked on figurative paintings in the 1960s, especially those of famous paintings like the Mona Lisa. moving to Paris in the 70s, and then starting in sculpting at that time. And then a tragic accident event happens in his family and leads him from the 1980s to work from clay to plaster to bronze. And it's really cool as far as the process and why he does what he does. It's a nice mix of high art, humor, and everyday life. And, it was enjoyable. So look for Cornette Films documentary Botero. And finally, we have the 2019 documentary. They're calling it a cryptocurrency documentary called The Harvest, set in the country of Georgia, a place with daily power outages, but has some of the highest form of digital capitalism. And this was, at one time, 20 years ago, the power outages were famous. And they're now apparently the second largest exporter of bitcoins in the world. So you have this really cool mixture of sound and images that it could be beehives, could be power generators, could be both. And the fact that you have these beautiful countrysides with these giant generators moving things along, even though you still have people on dirt roads with animals, no cars, no transportation. It's a fascinating look. And the fact that there is that much of a range as far as economics in the country of Georgia. So The Harvest, also out on video. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. And now it's time, friends, to grab a pencil. Let us check out what you have been watching over the last week. And we start on email by my buddy Eric, who starts with the UK drama from 1927 called Downhill, which he deemed so-so. A tedious drama about a wealthy prep school student who accepts the blame for the indiscretions of a less fortunate friend and is expelled from school and the path of self-destruction that comes with it. Also out from the UK in 1929, the film Blackmail, which he dubbed Good Plus and Movie History. A vivacious young woman, played by Aniandra, kills her rapist in self-defense. A con man seeking her revenge sees her leaving the scene of the struggle and tries to blackmail her. And her fiancé, a Scotland Yard detective, tries to help her implicate the con man. This is pre-code stuff here from 1929. And he revisited the 1934 original UK version of The Man Who Knew Too Much. Still marvelous. Of course, it's Alfred Hitchcock. So thank you, Eric. Appreciate that. Heading over to Twitter, Taff of the V is spooky all year long. We know Moneypenny. She started with the original Salem's Lot and The Brood were in the mix. Werner Herzog's Bear, Dracula AD 1972, Images, and Enola Holmes. Cuchillo Quarantine Lope, here's his week. Little Shop of Horrors, Zodiac, Rogue, and Prey. Thank you, gang. And that's it on Twitter over there. Going to Facebook, Camille writes Red and Red 2. Loved it. Ray writes, my dad is a heel wrestler. And adds to me, you know it likely. Angela says, Spy Game from 1991. Thought I'd seen every Robert Redford movie ever made, but somehow missed this thriller. It even had Brad Pitt for additional eye candy. Yes, Angela, that was a film I remember reviewing at Fox, and it's 2001, not 1991. But I remember reviewing that at Fox 59 AM, if I remember correctly, and saying it stars Robert Redford and his son, Brad Pitt. And yes, because that really started when Pitt appeared in the Redford film A River Runs Through It. Vicky writes, good morning. So I watched The Help, Tag, and Captain America, The First Avenger. Judy writes, Bottle Shock and The Comey Rule. Lou writes, The Assistant, On the Rocks, and Paul. Eric writes, rewatched It Part 1. Dylan writes, and he showed me a picture of the title card for the film, The Corpse Grinders. Yeah, that's a drive-in movie if there ever was one. Scott writes, went to Regal Cinema to see Hocus Pocus. Jared writes, the 1982 Rigoletto with Pavarotti. You didn't see it with Pavarotti, but Pavarotti was in it. Steven writes, Oliver Sacks, His Own Life, My Octopus Teacher, and David Attenborough, A Life on Our Planet. David writes, not a direct answer, but The Fly should be on the must-see list. And yes, everybody's waiting to see if Jeff Goldblum shows up in a cameo on Saturday Night Live this weekend. We'll see. Joshua writes, The Devil All the Time, Basic, Secret Window, and Real Steel. Nick writes, Phantasm 2, Phantasm 3, Phantasm 4, Phantasm Ravager, Poltergeist, Poltergeist 2, The Other Side, Hellraiser, Hellbound, Hellraiser 2. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Joshua. Carrie writes, Game Night. Sean writes, Well, I just watched the first Sharknado. Yep. Sarah writes, The Cheap Detective. Great copy on YouTube. And then she writes, Perfect Gentleman, 1978 TV movie starring Lauren Bacall, Sandy Dennis, and Ruth Gordon with a script by Nora Ephron. That's why Sarah delivers. She digs deep and gives us the info. Appreciate that, Chief. Christian writes, License to Kill, my pick for worst Bond film ever. The big stunt pieces were very unbelievable, as most of the stunt pieces in Bond films are. His relationships with women made even less sense than usual. Some of the acting was just bad, and Timothy Dalton gave me zero reason to care about his character. Okay. Lisa writes, Last Summer in the Hamptons. Mark writes, Being John Malkovich. Teresa writes, The Mountain Between Us with Kate Winslet. I would love to see you watch a movie with Kate Winslet. I wish I could watch a movie with Kate Winslet. I know. It's Kate Winslet and Idris Elba in The Mountain Between Us. Kate writes, The Lie, Suspiria, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, and Enola Holmes. Kate, which Suspiria? Joe writes, State of Texas versus Melissa, The Outside Story, American Murder, The Family Next Door, Worth the Wait, Horror Noir, The A History of Black Horror, Spiral, Sophie Jones, Save Yourself, and Vampires versus the Bronx. Joe writes, Two Guns, Dracula, Frankenstein, and Bride of Frankenstein. Melissa writes, I got to share Hidden Figures with my girls. Jonathan writes, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark from 1973. I still like it better than the remake. And The Babadook. I'm glad the director did not give in the pressure and make a sequel, or The Babadook 6 would be out now. That is correct, Jonathan. Thank you. Cassandra writes, No movies this week, but I did start watching season one of The Witcher. Kim writes, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood and The Ugly Dachshund. Grandson Visit. Kim, you don't have a grandson. That's a compliment, not a dig on the family. Patty writes, Terry Pratchett's Going Postal, Enola Holmes again, and a live stream Josh Groban concert. And she writes, Totally counts. All right, Patty. Dustin writes, The Corn is Green from 1945, L'Estrada, Around the World in 80 Days, The Defiant Ones, and the 2020 version of The Boys in the Band. Devin writes, The Addams Family, the most recent CGI remake, and Backstreet Boys, Show 'Em What You're Made Of. Eric writes, he's on Twitter or on Facebook as well. Thank you, Eric. First time viewing, repeat performance from 1947, good plus film noir, time travel fantasy. Cake from 2014, decent indie drama, terrific Jennifer Aniston performance, and his rewatch, the 1935 masterpiece from Hitchcock, The 39 Steps, which he followed with the interesting but only fair Secret Agent from 1936. Jeff writes, We watched The World's Fastest Indian. Camille chimes in again, The Danish Girl. It was wonderful. Joellen writes, Does cable count the Comey rule? Barry writes, We watched Little Women, the 2019 one, a couple of nights ago, and no wonder it won awards on both sides of the pond. The issues of civil war, contagion, privilege, and the choices women have to make in a culture were clear themes that have contemporary echoes. Thank you, Barry. Melissa writes, I watched Hubie Halloween last night. I'm not ashamed. That's the latest Adam Sandler picture. Dave writes, Dangerous Minds, Amish Abduction, Freedom Riders, Two Guns, and The Birdcage. Jamie writes, Halloween Town, Halloween Town 2, and a whole lot of Once Upon a Time with Kai. Cassie writes, Enola Holmes. Jenny writes, Enola Holmes and Boys in the Band. Jed writes, Watch Tori Jones' new film, Wicked Ones, at their world premiere at the Fright Night Film Festival in Louisville, Kentucky, and also the short film Piggy by Dixie Gears. G-E-R-S, sorry. Highly recommended checking out both this Halloween season. Doug writes the 2020 Boys in the Band, The Citadel, Monterey Pop, Hercules, 1997 Hercules, and Our Miss Brooks. Sarah writes Halloween Town and Hoosiers. Craig writes Solaris, the original Solaris. And then he chimes, I'll have to watch the newer U.S. version now. My story on Steven Soderbergh's Solaris, the one with George Clooney. I was doing XNT reviews with the morning crew, and there was an advanced screening of this film, and word had got out that there was going to be a nude scene from George Clooney. And so I remember Jim and Trapper and I were up at the front, and it was majority of the audience were women. And, you know, it was, and so the guys are greeting, you know, are you ready for a fun movie tonight? And I said, I actually yelled, who's here to see George Clooney's butt? And the crowd went crazy. The problem, now it is true, there that moment does happen. The problem is nobody had any idea that this was a remake of a 70s Russian head trip of a film. And there were a lot of walkouts. So I guess George's tush just didn't do it for everybody. Joan, I can hear you. You're all right. Back to the list. Britt writes A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Double Jeopardy, The Boys in the Band, 21 Bridges, Solo, Smurfs and Smurfs 2, The Simpsons Movie, The Hate U Give, and Fried Green Tomatoes. Gary writes Sweet Trash, The Hang Up, Infidel, Vampire Ecstasy, and Spectre. Daniel writes Interiors, Sleeper, Sense and Sensibility, The Boys in the Band, Radio Days, Far From Heaven, The Maltese Falcon, We're Not Married, To Rome with Love, A Midsummer Night's Sex Comedy, oh, we had a theme here, Love and Death, Mighty Aphrodite, Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex, Hollywood Ending, Celebrity, and Heaven Can Wait. Randy writes Sodbusters. Adam writes The Dead Don't Die, and last night I watched the Dax Shepard and Michael Pena's film version of Chips. Catherine writes Smokey and the Bandit, Zombieland Double Tap, Son of Frankenstein, Frida, and Creep. Scott writes Let It Ride. Brent writes Glory. Rachel writes The Abominable Dr. Fibes, solid B movie but gets an F for theology. That's not why you're watching that movie, Rachel. And she also adds The Cat and the Canary. Beverly writes The Birdcage, Jumanji 2, and Rebel Without a Cause. Jay writes Bad Times at the El Royale, The Addams Family, and Rewatching The Mandalorian. John writes One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Silence of the Lambs. Prior to this week, my wife hadn't seen neither. And John, that's why we're watching what we're watching while we're stuck at home. Matt writes Fargo, the TV show, and The Cheesy Art of Racing in the Rain. Moveen writes Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. The historical drama was a tough watch. It is shameful on the part of the American government and military, and they haven't paid the first penny of financial restitution agreed to. One of the banned books filmed in 2007, gut-wrenching. For a change of pace, Pet Sounds, a documentary on the making of the iconic Beach Boys album, and Freddie Mercury, Under the Spotlight, interviews of Freddie Mercury and, of course, the members of the band Queen. And she chimes in, DVDs available at your local library. You're right there. And finally, Amy chimes in with Meet the Fockers, F-O-C-K-E-R-S. So there you go. So there's plenty of titles out there. I hope you're not getting burnt out. And if you are able to go to a drive-in, kudos to you. And if you have the gumption to go to a movie theater, good for you as well. It's, as I mentioned before, I'm directing a play at the Cat Theater. Plaza Suite is happening Friday and Saturday night at 8 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m. Now, granted, we have limited seating, but it's my first task, my first production indoors since everything went kablooey. And so far, it's been the first weekend went really well, and everything has been safe and distance and done the way it should be. And we expect to do that again this weekend. So anyway, if you're able to go to a movie theater or go to a theater, we'd love to have you at the Cat Theater this weekend. But this has been very helpful for me as far as taking a step forward in the petri dish that we are living in now. And also, of course, the Heartland Film Festival is running through October 18th. There are virtual screenings as well as events at the Tibbs Drive-In as well as at Connor Prairie. So go to heartlandfilm.org for more information and check out the Heartland Film Festival if you can. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're being good to one another. And we'll try and we'll connect again next week. We're going to end this week's show with another musical tribute to Eddie Van Halen, who passed away earlier this week. Also from the soundtrack to the film Twister, this is Eddie and Alex Van Halen. This was used at the end of the film, an instrumental piece called Respect the Wind. And take care, everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!